I have in my possession a few selections, unpublished, from mother's talks to few individuals, and I thought before I take up our subject, integral perfection, we could spend a little while listening to these things, which will take at least 2 years before they are printed in the centenary volumes. They are notes taken down by disciples and afterwards read out to mother and approved by her. They were not actually written down. In ancient times, the disciple had to undergo severe tests to prove his ability for initiation. Here we do not follow that method. Apparently, there is no test and no trial. But if you see the truth, you will find that here it is much more difficult. There, the disciple knew that he was undergoing a period of trial, and after he had passed through some outward tests, he was taken in. But here, you have to face life and you are watched at every moment. It is not only your outer actions that count. Each and every thought and inner movement is seen. Every reaction is noticed. It is not what you do in the solitude of the forest, but what you do in the thick of the battle of life that is important. Are you ready to submit yourself for such tests? Are you ready to change yourself completely? You will have to throw off your ideas, ideals, values, interests and opinions. Everything will have to be learned anew. If you are ready for all this, then take a plunge. Otherwise, don't try to step in. Flies, mosquitoes and other insects are the formation of the asura. Asura does not create, it only gives the form. In the vital world, you find monsters very ugly and detestable in shape. They are represented in physical form by those numerous creatures. Some of them actually look like monsters, and some may take very good shape. The asura may appear as a dazzling light, and unless you can go behind it and see the reality, you may take it to be the divine light. In the beginning of creation, even before the birth of the gods, 4 asuras were born of Aditi. 2 of them have changed. 1 has not yet made up his mind, and the 4th one has decided to fight against the divine. He knows it very well that he cannot succeed, but he insists that he should be destroyed. He knows it too well that his time is almost finished. Therefore, he is trying to bring as much destruction upon earth as he may. He does not get disappointed or depressed by defeat. He becomes more violent. He knows me and he is obliged to inform me about all his plans beforehand. There is no disease from which I have not suffered. I have taken all the diseases upon my body to see their course and to have their knowledge by experience in the physical, so that I may be able to work upon them. But as my physical has no fear and it responds to the higher pressure, so it is easier for me to get rid of them. The whole thing is based on the wrong idea that all men are equal, so that they must get the same variety and quantity of things. It is not true. While giving your rejected fruits to the servant, you should not think that he is mean and so he deserves all that is bad. If you give with this idea, you will be insulting humanity. The insult will be in you and it will do harm to you. You must be able to see from the point of economy in the world. Take humanity as a mass. Certain things are good for a certain portion and other things are good for the others. I have seen with my own eyes how people take out what you would call most dirty things from the gutters and put them straight in the mouth. Well, they don't get cholera and they don't die. They have a strength that you don't have. If you keep them in boiled water and the best of your food, they will get sick. You can give them good things, but do not deprive them of their strength. In comparison to what they eat, the rejected things that you give them are luxuries for them. If you give them with the idea that you are giving them things that poor eye is unable to take and they have the strength to assimilate, then where is the insult? You will be doing them great harm if you give them your so-called higher standard of living and deprive them of their strength and immunity without giving them the means to keep to it. For some time you may provide with better things, but afterwards they will not have the things of your standard, and you would have made them incapable of living within their means. Either raise their standard fully and give them the capacity to earn more and be able to maintain that standard, or let them keep their standard and teach them to improve matters within their means. If you have to exercise authority, have authority on yourself first. If you cannot keep discipline amongst the children, don't beat or shout or get agitated. That is not permissible. Bring down calm and peace from above, and under their pressure, things will improve. The question of life after death seems to be so stupid and meaningless. It presumes that there are two distinct compartments of life divided by death. In fact, it is not so. There is only one life and it continues. After death, it is the same life without any change, only it is minus the body. Otherwise, in all other respects, it is the same. If we are only the body and nothing else, then it could be said that life ceases as soon as the body drops down. But even the cats and dogs are not merely a body. They also have their vitals. I have known dogs that consciously used to go out of their bodies. There was a dog of Theon. When I used to be in meditation, he used to rise out of his body and come to me and poke his vital cold nose into my body to inform me that it was time to come out of meditation. I used to come down and find his body under the staircase lying in a deep sleep. When you die, you do not go outside earth. The psychic may go for a repose in the psychic world, but the life of the vital continues exactly in the same way for a very long time. Only you lose the fortress that affords protection, I mean the body. When you are in your body, if the vital goes in some dangerous places, it can always rush back to the body for protection. But once you are without a body, you are at the mercy of each and every passing force, unless, of course, you have the divine protection. That is why death will not solve any of your problems. If at all, it will only increase them by taking away the protection of the body. The evolutionary creation has reached up to man, the highest that can be reached by the mind. Then there is the creation of the asura, insects, worms, and the like belong to this category. If you see them under the microscope, they are the exact replica of the beings of the vital world. The third is the creation of the gods and angels. They are the birds. Swam represents the soul. In this category, the highest being is the involved man, where the consciousness comes down and takes a form. It is not made by sex. It is something coming from above to help in the changing of the lower creation. Above both of these stands the Supreme. I love all, even the asuras are my children. They were the firstborn. People are fools, and I have to bear the consequences of their foolishness. But I can't cover them. To each one here, power, light, and strength are given, as much as he can take, and even more. It is given for transforming him. When you take all that and use for your personal ends and for the so-called human love, it is dishonesty. It is robbery. It is the crime of the first order. You must use everything for the purpose for which it is given. Otherwise you commit a crime. I am not speaking merely of the physical things. All the inner things that I am giving you all the time, all the strength, light and energy of life that are being poured into you all the time are meant for service of the Divine, for the sake of transforming you. If you use them for any other purpose, you are a robber and your crime is the worst possible. The more people are greedy, the more I give them. If they are satisfied with the physical things only, they can have them, but it is not good for them. I like to give to those who do not ask. Question was, when I report to you about the doings of others, does it mean that I complain against them, and is it right to do that? It all depends upon your attitude. If you report a matter with a spirit of vengeance against someone, or to show your superiority, or with any other personal motive, then it is absolutely wrong and you should not do that. But the true way is that you should be like a mirror and reflect faithfully whatever you see. Don't give your personal coloring and be quite dispassionate. If there is something wrong in the mirror itself, then I can correct it. But you must try that your mirror does not distort the picture. We spoke last time of perfection as the aim of life, at any rate as the aim of awakened life. Now, what exactly is the content of that perfection? In the progress of humanity, this perfection has been attempted in two dimensions. One, what we would call a mundane perfection, which involves a progressive harmonizing of the qualities and functions of nature, improving of the quality of the mind, raising up the level of motives, desires and activities, ensuring the evolution of a society in which the individual plays his due part and the society contributes to the development of the individual concerned, and a culturing, an external culturing of education, art, aesthetics and the like, all going to build up a giant edifice of external civilization. Age after age, things are improved, human effort is put in to make things more elegant, to make best of the time and the opportunities offered to man, to build up something like a perfect external man. This may be called the objective perfection. Side by side, there is a religious perfection where the stress is laid not so much on the external life, external consciousness, external edifices, but in developing the inner faculties which are not normally operative in day-to-day life, in developing those faculties which are recognized on all hands as desirable, as contributing to harmony, unity, love, benevolence. These qualities are deliberately nurtured, say with the help of ethics, morality, religion, scripture, in every possible way, and the highest type of the perfect men so evolved are what we call saints, sages, mystics. As we observe, a saint is one in whom the heart is highly cultured and from whom compassion, kindliness, love emanate spontaneously. He embraces larger and larger segments of humanity spontaneously. A sage is one whose mind is so cultured, whose mind is subjected to the working of the higher light of knowledge, who has cultivated and naturalized a wider outlook, whose vision includes the whole cosmos, And who can see beyond his immediate individual interests, and not only see, but shape his conduct in terms of his new perspective. He is the seer, one who sees beyond the normal range of interests to which the pragmatic man is accustomed. There are the mystics who have, as a result of cultivation of religious practices or other kinds of inner psychological disciplines, we may call it yoga, they enter into their consciousness in a realm of experience which does not lend itself to be scrutinized by intellectual reason, but is nevertheless true, has its own impact, because one can't deny one's own experience. And wherever these mystic experiences have occurred, there is a common underlying basis. There are certain features which are common. They can always be corroborated. Even today, a mystic experience of 1,000 years ago can always be evoked and verified in one's consciousness if one adopts the means therefor. Now these are some of the representative specimens of religious type of perfection. But by and large, these religious perfects, even spiritual perfects in this mold, they aim at going beyond this world. The mundane perfectionist has this earth as his field. But those who perfect themselves in the religious way, spiritual way, as obtaining till now, they have their eye elsewhere, outside, above this earth, in other worlds, but not here. Thus, either of these modes of perfection is limited. One shuts itself to this narrow segment of the universe called the earth. The other shifts its gaze from the field in front of us and looks elsewhere for perfection to be attained and enjoyed after the snapping of life. But the integral perfection of which we speak here is of a different kind. We start with the principle, with the truth, that all life is a secret yoga. We are not aware of it. But there is a continuous, purposeful movement in nature at every level, each thing leading to something. On the level of mind, there is a continuous progression of the faculty of thought. Each layer of the mind is built up based upon the previous attempt. The mind of today, the mind of an average man of today is quite different from the mind of an identical person, say 200 years ago. That is because nature has traversed great areas in the course of its evolution, and development of the mental ranges of the earth consciousness. So too in the life region, so also in the body. Everywhere, whether it is the body or the life or the mind, the fundamental faculty, the fundamental power is trained not only to organize itself and perfect itself within that formula, but to exceed it. Body comes into, really comes into its own vibrant movement only when the life consciousness is established in it and fused with the body. Similarly, life energy becomes more meaningful and chooses the right direction when it is informed by the mental consciousness. At each level, nature pushes, takes millenniums, takes ages, but still throughout there is a nisus, an impulse, a push given to the evolving consciousness to grow from grade to grade, acquire control over each grade, full control over each grade, by transcending that grade. And the aim, ultimate aim, obviously, after having arrived at our stage of mind, is to go into something beyond mind. And what is beyond mind? It is generally agreed, it is a form of spirit. We may call, give it different names, but it is a power of the spirit that is seeking expression in higher and higher forms of the mind, and mind also seeks to develop new forms of its activity by invoking, pulling down new faculties of the spirit. It seeks to grow into the truth. It seeks to grow into the spirit. And there is a continuous coercion if man is not voluntarily cooperating. There is a coercion on the lower members to lay themselves open and grow into their higher terms. With the arrival of man, this movement takes on a new character. Man becomes conscious and man takes up the direction of the effort. He wants to telescope the process, to expedite the results. He is impatient and he puts in an effort, and that effort is twofold. One is the personal endeavor to rise. Sri Aurobindo speaks of the triple labor of aspiration of what you want, rejection of what is contra, of what is opposite, of what is hostile to what you seek, and surrender. Surrender is the laying open of more and more areas of your being to the truth which you wish to embody, to the truth which you are invoking. But with all that we do, there is a limit to personal effort. The most that we have succeeded in reaching so far is a kind of spiritualization of mind. The mind has agreed to give up its confinement to the intellectual or the logical confines. It has put on the character of higher mind, of the quality of the spirit which is free and behind everything. It has accepted the leadership in many cases
of the spiritual being. But there it stops. The next step, after one arrives at a limit that holds one progress further, is to invoke, summon an aid, help from higher powers beyond the spiritual range which one has covered. And these powers above the mind, above the spiritual mind, come from sources which are much higher, from the sources of the Divine. In a word, our human nature has not only got to be perfected within the human limits, but it has to be liberated into the dimension of a divine nature. Goes beyond what we call the mundane perfection, what we call the religious perfection, and in this cosmic movement of which the individual is a part, movement to perfect and transmute earthly nature into a super nature, into a divine nature. All life, all that is behind life is accepted. Nothing that has been evolved is treated as useless. If we think a thing is useless, it means we do not know for what purpose it had been evolved. This ideal, this teaching rejects nothing, accepts everything, and allots to it its due role in the general harmony. The integral ideal is not content to change the scene of human activity from earth to heaven. It includes both heaven and earth in its total scheme. And this can only be done when the ranges above the spiritual being are dynamized and made active in the human formula. One starts accepting, perceiving an omnipresent existence, an omnipresent existence of something that covers all ranges of the universe. The different worlds, the different planes of existence, what we call heaven and hell, what we see and experience as earth, all these are not only included in the omnipresent existence, but they are themselves extensions, self-projections of that existence. After one recognizes this supreme fact, this next step is to open to the divine reality above our universal formula. We know how far the earth nature goes. We know the limits and the ceiling. But there is a divine above it. It is written in number of our texts that the foundations of this creation are above. Whether in the Veda or in the Upanishads, it is clearly said that the true foundations are not here, are there, are above. And the aim of the integral yogin is there. The source of things, the source of perfect knowledge, perfect power, perfect consciousness and perfect bliss is there at the root, is there at the fount of creation. And therefore the consciousness is open and held open to whatever incursions, influxes and floodings take place in the course of yoga. But that's not enough. An individual opening himself and holding the supracosmic descent solves nobody's problem. Yet at the same time to extend his consciousness so as to embrace larger and larger segments of existence, the individual becomes the universal in consciousness. Third, the action of divinization, the action of divine nature is not to be somewhere in our best moments, in our summits of our being, say in trance, what we call samadhi, but they have to be made part of everyday life. As each gain is built up, it has to be linked to day-to-day life, tested, and our external life made to assimilate the inner gain. So the field of divine nature is not somewhere above, somewhere beyond, but around us. And we have to link ourselves not only with the reality above, the reality within us has to be linked with the reality above, with the reality around in all. And when this takes place, man, the perfected man, the liberated man, he does not cease to be. He cannot merge even if he wants. He continues to be a channel. He continues to be a point, a center for the action of the divine or the supracosmic force. If, once mother asked, if it is true, as some of the old philosophies assert, that after liberation, when man dies, if he has taken steps to liberate himself from ignorance, his soul is going to merge into Parabrahman, into the reality. What earthly need was there? What need, heavenly need also could be there for a soul to be put out from the vast transcendent being? When a soul has been put out, it is the purpose. And unless that purpose of manifestation is fulfilled, that soul will continue to be. It may appear to merge, but it is not cancelled. Even within the being of the divine, the individual soul continues to be an individual center, receiving and radiating what it receives. But it is not cancelled out of existence. So this is the essence of the integral divine perfection, namely recognition of an omnipresent existence, opening to the action of the supracosmic divine, extending the individual consciousness to embrace and become one with the universal consciousness, and to project the action of divine nature in our deepest or highest levels of being in day-to-day life with the individual soul functioning as a center, as a channel for the divine energy. Question?
Living led by the phrase spirit in mind.
Pardon?
Spirit in mind.
Spirit in the mind. The spirit, by its very definition, is what constitutes the core of things. Behind every form, within every form, there is something. And because that something is there, that form is held into existence. So what is behind the surface? What holds a thing together, the essence of a thing, the core of a thing, that is called the spirit. Now that spirit poises itself in a particular way on the physical plane as the body, on the life plane as the life energy, on the mind plane maybe as thought of the mental being. Now, spirit in mind means the essential part of the mind, the spirit that is embodied in the mind. It does not mean thought process, sense mind, logic, but that essence which gives life and formation to the mental being. Mind is not taken as a mere instrument of knowledge, as a discoverer of knowledge, but as an instrument of the spirit. To manifest knowledge,
the title of the chapter made me think of something that recently happened, this decay in the cell. Is there an idea of perfection in this decay that would make them open to the idea of perfect consciousness or something having a process leading toward perfection within their nature?
Mm. No. It is purely a destructive movement. Mm. Even when they mean nature, they have their own definition of nature. Let them not recognize the divine or God or the spirit. But even the nature, what they say, it is the lower vital nature. They are enemies of culture. They will break down all these things. They want to bring human consciousness to the lowest average level. You see, their very emblem is black. It is significant. Whenever anybody is attracted to the black, it shows a certain proclivity and inclination to the devil, anti-divine. An attraction to white, always somewhere towards purity. You see. Now this dark thing, that is why it is not without reason that dark thing, when persons die, that black border, black things. Black is the chosen color of the Antichrist. And the DMK people have chosen, DK people, dark, black. So it is an asura, or a, I don't think no, they have got such an intelligent being to guide them as an asura, but a pishacha. You see, they are made to choose this. Their cunning is so much. You know, there are these antibiotic tablets. The red half and black half. They are given free in the hospitals when people fall sick. When these ordinary unlettered people go to the hospital sick and all that, they give those and they get better. Now those people have said they are DK tablets because their flag is red and black. You understand? So this is how their intelligence works. There is no... They don't mean by nature what we mean. They say there is no afterlife. This life is all. There is no God, there is no nothing, there is no soul. No, there is no progress except economic well-being. So they don't mean to be taken seriously.